com. NewsForce is a new kind of news impacting your life. Exclusively on NewsForce247.com.
Good morning, friends and neighbors. This is Pastor Craig Heilman with Study His Word Radio. Welcome again this morning, and if you've been with us for the last couple of Sundays, you know that I start out every Sunday with about a 20-minute Bible study. We've been studying in the book of Ephesians. This morning we're going to suspend our study because I have a guest here today that I would like to give him as much opportunity to talk to you and let you hear his story as I can. We're going to be talking about missionaries today. And we all, most of us probably know somebody who's a missionary or at some point in time in our life have come across a missionary. And, you know, often they go to what we consider like a third world country or a rather exotic place. But our missionary today is right here in the United States. But I think you'll find it rather interesting. I just wanted to take a second and say that the job or the chore or the gift or the passion of being a missionary goes way back. Most of us are familiar with the story of Jonah in the Old Testament. And Jonah was a missionary, and he was commanded by God to go to the city of Nineveh. And you probably know the story where he resisted and ended up spending 3 days in the belly of a fish and ended up going to Nineveh to spread the message, to spread the gospel. And the gospel is just a word that means good news. And the good news that Jonah was supposed to spread was that if the people of Nineveh repented of their sin and turned toward God, that they would be saved. And we also probably you're probably familiar with the story of John the Baptist, who lived during the time of Jesus, and he traveled through the desert and again was sharing the gospel, the good news, that if people repented and turned to God, that they would be saved. You may be familiar with Paul, who wrote a large portion of the New Testament, who went on several missionary trips. So we hear today about different kinds of missionaries. There are those that are doctors that go to other countries and take, you know, their health skills, their healing skills, their doctor skills to minister to people in other countries. And there are other missionaries that go and dig wells and build villages. But the primary function, the primary duty, the primary work, vocation of a missionary is that of spreading the gospel, the good news. And today it's the good news of Jesus Christ. So I just want to introduce young man here, Sean Higgins. Sean is the associate pastor at Grace Baptist Church here in Marion, but he's going to be leaving Marion very soon to be a missionary. And so I'm going to give him a chance to tell his story to you. So, Sean, welcome this morning. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me, Craig, and thank you all for tuning in and listening. I appreciate the radio station and Craig as well for giving me the opportunity to come on here and share my story with you.
Great. So, Sean, let's start off by you telling us where it is you're headed to.
Where we're heading to, we operate with a ministry organization called Ratio Christi, which is Latin for the reason of Christ. It's a campus apologetics ministry where we go to these college campuses, we share the gospel, defend the faith, and then train students to do the same. And we're heading to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, seeking to plant a chapter there.
Great. So what specifically will you do when you get there?
Well, what we'll be doing is every single day during the week we'll be out on the campus, set up with a table, show it with resources showing that Christianity is true, and then also with a whiteboard with a question in the form of a survey such as, does evil show that God does not exist, or did Jesus rise from the grave, or does free will exist, whatever it might be. We'll have some kind of question like that to catch their attention. It's in the form of a survey. And so when those students come by, they can answer that survey however they want. But when they do, I'm going to ask them why they answered the way they answered, and then try to have a conversation with them to see where they're at spiritually, and then try to lead them towards the cross of Christ and the gospel. And so that'll be the everyday things that we do there on the campus. But beyond that, we'll have a weekly time where we gather together as a group and have a conversation about an apologetics issue, a theological issue, whatever it might be. We'll have a group discussion of that, and then also have a time every week every other week to have them at our house and feed them and spend time with them, build relationships.
Now, will you be connected with any specific church?
We have a local church plant called Chapel Hill Baptist Church, which is right next to the campus. we'll be attending there and also serving as the youth pastor. I'll be serving as the youth pastor there at that church. And so we have kind of an in-reach with the high school, middle school students there at the church and then to the high schools through there, but also working on the campus throughout the week. So it'll be kind of a mixed bag of those two things, functioning in the church and on the campus.
Now, I mentioned that you are currently the associate pastor at Grace Baptist Church here in Marion. So how does one go from being associate pastor to deciding to be a missionary?
Well, deciding is a light way of putting it, but I think it goes back to my testimony. This ministry, how we got tied into it, really ties right into how I come to know the Lord.
And please take as much time as you need to share your testimony, because I think people will find it very interesting. I know I did when you and I sat down and talked and you shared your testimony. So, you know, I don't want you to feel like you have to give us an abbreviated version of it.
Okay.
Just share as much as you would care to share.
All right. I was raised here in Marion, born and raised here in Marion, but I grew up in a home that was not a Christian home. Pretty much my dad, he was an abusive drunk. He beat my mom until she left when I was 10 years old, and then he turned the abuse towards me. And so that really, it was scarring in a way, created a lot of anger and hatred within me. And we never had any church experience, no Bible reading, no prayer time at home. It was just pretty much drugs and alcohol all the time and then fighting. And so I went to church one time with my grandfather in Southern Ohio, and I went to this church. It was a very legalistic style of church that they pretty much, if you look different, if you talk different, they kind of neglected you. So when I come in the church, I had long hair and wore all black clothes at the time and had piercings in my face, and not a single one of them talked to me. So between the abuse and that experience combined, by the time I graduated high school, I was a borderline atheist. I was pretty much to the point where I was saying that more than likely God does not exist, and that if he does, I really don't care. And so I had no reason to even step in foot in the church, but my senior year of high school, about a month before I graduated, I met my wife, and she's not my wife, but I met her, and I said, well, there's a pretty girl here in the cafeteria at school. I'm going to go talk to her. So I sat down and started talking to her, trying to get her to go out on a date with me. It took me about 3 or 4 tries to finally get her to go out on a date with me. And so she finally went on a date with me, and after the date, she about a week later, she told me, she goes, look, I'm a Christian, I go to church, won't you come to this cookout my church is putting on? And so I was like, pretty girl, free food, I'll step foot inside the church. And so I went and I suffered for about an hour or 2 hours actually, and but the pastor said some things that day that caught my attention. He said some things about Christianity being true, as well as our country being founded on Christian principles. And those two things caught my attention. So for the next 6 months, I was attending church every week with her, but also doing some research in the background, trying to see whether this was true or not. And at the end of that 6 months, right towards the end of it, the youth pastor at the time, Jason Martin, he's a pastor over in Marengo, he gave me the book, The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. And when I read that, I was amazed by the amount of evidence there was for the Christian faith. And that made me believe that it was intellectually true. Now, intellectually, I knew it was true, and then the next week, I ended up making the decision to trust in Christ. And so that's how I come to faith. Now, this ministry, go back to your question with going from the pastorate to being an associate pastor, being a missionary. This ministry is an apologetics ministry, which the apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia, which is to give a reason defense for what you believe. And so with that being right out of my testimony, we got involved with this ministry here in town because there was a professor out here giving some students trouble. And so when I heard about that, there was a student in our church that had some trouble with that. And so I come out, started doing some evangelism. Well, come to find out, the only ministry we had was basically a Bible study and a fellowship. There was no real outreach with it. There was no trying to reach people, no defending the faith there on the campus. And so I started doing some research. I come across this, and I was like, this comes right out of my ties right into my testimony and allows me to use what God used to lead me to him, to use it to lead somebody else to him. And so when I become the associate pastor, they brought me on with the agreement until I finished Bible college, I would be there, and then we'd make a decision whether I was going to stay or whether I was going to go. Well, last year, before COVID hit, we started praying about what we were going to do as I graduate here in about here this coming week. And so we started praying about what to do when we come across some opportunities in North Carolina. And come to find out, I was expecting Ratio Christi, since it was founded in North Carolina, to have North Carolina covered. But come to find out, they have the Research Triangle in North Carolina, which is Chapel Hill, Durham, and Raleigh. they have one college with a chapter, and the rest of them don't have a chapter. And the regional director for them down there told me that UNC Chapel Hill, which is where the most famous agnostic in our country, Bart Ehrman, he's the leader of the religion department there, that he is there and that we don't have a chapter there. That bothered me to my core. And so I was like, this is something we need to do. After praying about it for a while, my wife, she was on board with me about it. And we was trying to find a church to be a part of. And we was having trouble with that part. So we was kind of at a loss of, what are we going to do? And the president of my college, he put me in contact with that church planter in the area and said, won't you give him a call? So when I call him, lo and behold, for 5 or 6 months, he had been praying. He and the church as well have been praying for somebody to come and help with evangelism and apologetics there on the campus. And so it was just a way of God just organizing everything and putting everything together to show us that this is where we belong at. And so when we found that out, we was like, this is where we got to go. And so that's kind of what launched us that direction. And so I think if that answers your question about how we go from that.
Yeah, it does. Although I am going to ask you to back up a little bit, because as you know, and when you and I talked, I have in some ways a similar background from the standpoint that, you know, when I was in college, I considered myself an atheist, and I was convinced that I knew that there was no God, and I knew why there was no God. And then through a, you know, series of events, you know, my life was a total train wreck. I was pursuing the almighty dollar, and nothing else mattered. And, you know, sometimes you do things that you know aren't right, but you're in pursuit of something, and you have no spiritual foundation on which you make your decisions. I understand, you know, kind of your background, but kind of fill in that gap for me, or for our listeners too, where, you know, you and your wife to be are, you know, you go to her church, and then the pastor there says some things that really click with you, and, you know, you get saved. At what point did, you know, you get saved and you're learning, you're studying, at what point did you even feel the call to go into the ministry of any kind?
It was about a year and a half after I come to the Lord. I was just, I always had the urge to go and serve. And so the youth pastor at the time, when I started talking to him about it and telling him, like, look, I feel like God wants me to teach. He wants me to get involved. And he goes, well, come teach youth group for me. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll come teach youth group. And so I went and taught youth group. And once I taught it, it went horrible. It lasted about 10 minutes, and that was it. But went in there and taught youth group. And from there, I'm just like, this is definitely what I'm supposed to be doing. And so from there, I just got opportunities just kept getting handed to me to teach, to get involved, and then started getting opportunities to preach and fill in the pulpit on the evening services. Served as a youth pastor for a little while, and then come back and served as the associate pastor. So it's just between God just putting it on my heart to get involved and serve in whatever way was open to me, just being willing to do whatever it was, and then God just opening doors in various ways to just show me, hey, this is where I'm leading you to. And for the longest time, I thought it was church ministry only, and that's what I was going to do, is just be a pastor. But lo and behold, God kind of shakes things up, as he does once in a while, and he moved us more towards the missionary side of things, which we're still involved in church ministry as well, but kind of flipping the roles. Right now we're doing Ratio Christi Volunteer and then serving full-time at the church, whereas down there we're going to be serving full-time with Ratio Christi and part-time at the church, so okay. Kind of flipping the roles there. But just the way he opened doors and the calling he put within my heart to just get involved.
Now, you mentioned that Ratio Christi is headquartered or started in North Carolina.
Yep.
And so you were kind of surprised when you found out that there wasn't somebody working in that area where you're going to be. How much of the United States do they have covered?
Across the United States, as well as in the Philippines, Africa, a few European countries, we have 125 chapters scattered. I think there's more than that now, as we've had several new ones getting started right now. Like, there's at least 6 other guys right now, including myself, raising support to go and plant a chapter somewhere.
Okay. Are there the people that founded or run the organization, are there any names that maybe some of our listeners might be familiar with?
Well, the ministry itself, it was started in North Carolina at Southern Evangelical Seminary, which is where Norman Geisler, Frank Turek, and people like that, that's their headquarters there. And so it was founded by some students there right after the New Atheist movement started getting going real hard here in our country. And so that's where they were founded. So Corey Miller is the president now. You can look him up. He's been putting out a lot of videos for our ministry as well as going around speaking. That's some of the names. Frank Turk would be one of the voices of support. Norman Geisler, Josh McDowell's voiced his support of what we do. He's been kind of involved in the background. Because, like, one thing we do as a chapter is every semester we have one of these guys, they come on the campus with us and they speak or they do a debate. And so those guys have a big involvement in what we're doing as well.
What do you see as one of your biggest challenges that you're going to face when you're down there?
One of my biggest challenges is going to be kind of going into the midst of just the culture that's going on right now with this era of cancel culture of trying to say, if you disagree with me, then we can't talk together. And so we got to kind of find ways to lovingly get past that cancel culture with students, because a lot of students, they kind of embrace the cancel culture.
Now, you've spent some time on the OSU campus.
Yeah, here in Marion, I have.
Did you find much resistance or rejection or hostility?
Not too much, actually. I had one professor in particular that he gave me a hard time a couple times when I first started going, and I only ever had one student that had a problem with me to try to get me removed from the campus, but it's a public university, so there was really not much she could do. I mean, she went to the student leadership, I think, that she did, but that didn't go anywhere from there. That was more because she just didn't like my presence more than me just saying something wrong. It was just that she did not like Christianity, because I mean she made up things to try to get me kicked off.
And I have a feeling when you're down there in North Carolina, those are bigger campuses than what we have here in Marion, so you'll probably run into a little bit more of those people that don't want you there.
Yeah, and with that, I when somebody has a problem with me, or they start poking fun or making some comment towards me, it's known as an ad hominem attack. They're attacking the person rather than the message. And so the way I look at it, and I keep this in the back of my mind at all times when dealing with any person I'm talking to and trying to share the gospel with, is that if they're attacking me, they're not really having a problem with me. They really more have a problem with the message, but they have no response to it. Because if they had a response to what I'm saying, they would offer it. But instead, they're attacking me as a person. And so I just kind of take that, and I'm like, I'll let it roll off my back if somebody gets offended and they start getting mad at me. And it's not, now I try to be as loving and as kind as I can be, but even then, you're still going to have some of those people that just, they dislike what you're saying.
Right. Now, obviously, your wife will be a big support person for you in your ministry. Is she going to have any involvement in the work there above and beyond being a support person for you?
Yeah. What we plan to do is one thing we do with our ministry is especially our student leaders, but also just the ones that are growing. We try to help them to grow by I'll take three male students under my wing throughout the week and just meet with them individually to help them grow, help them with their Bible study, help them with whatever way they need to grow, help them with connecting with a church in the area because some of these students don't have a church. She'll do the same thing with the female students. And as well as being involved, like when we have them over to our house, helping with spending time with students and stuff like that, she'll have a big role in some of those other things. She might not be seen as much right now, as we got three little kids, all under the age of 7. So she takes care of them a lot to free me up, and that's a big help. But beyond that, she'll have that time with those students, pouring time in them, because she's very good at connecting with somebody's heart. Yeah, better than I am at it. So she has a big role in kind of the connection with those students.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question. People listening on the radio can't see you, but I know you look like you're not very old, but I know you are old enough to be doing this. If I may ask, how old are you?
Oh, I'm 30.
Okay, all right. So, you know, obviously you're at an age – and, you know, that you can connect with college students. And somebody like myself, who's more than twice your age, probably wouldn't be able to connect as well as you can with college students. So do you see like a time frame where, you know, you're most effective for a certain period of time, and then there'll come a time when, you know, as you get older, you're less likely to connect? Or, I mean, do you see that as a basically that you have a certain window of time for your ministry?
No, not really. I don't believe that a minister, if God's called you to something, unless he calls me to something else, but if he's called you to something, he's going to gift you for it. He's going to provide for you to do it, and he's going to give you the ability to do it. And with us, especially with the ministry there on the campus, it's a student-run organization. So pretty much what right now, I have a lot on my shoulders right now dealing with them. But as we develop student leaders, they take the lead. And that gets me more excited than anything I get to do, is to see a student grow in their faith, take the leadership role, and go and reach others with it. And so I don't see us as having a limited time frame. I think pretty much doing it until God either calls us somewhere else or if he takes us home, whichever.
So if our listeners wanted to find out more about the organization Ratio Christi, how would they do that?
Yeah, they can go to the website, which is www.ratiochristi, which I can spell that real quick, is RATIOCHRISTI, and then .org.
And I apologize for mispronouncing it.
That's okay.
Now, part of what you have to do is you have to raise support for mm-hmm. yourself. So just kind of briefly tell our listeners, you know, why you have to raise support, what kind of support you need to have, all the different ways that somebody could support you, how they would support you. Kind of fill us in on that, please.
Well, the biggest thing is prayer, because we believe that God has called us to this ministry, and we've asked him to provide, and we've seen him work miraculously throughout this entire time. I mean, we've been at it for 6 months, and we're already to the point where we're getting ready to move. And so seeing him work, I have no question he's going to provide. And so biggest thing is prayer. But beyond that, I like to be personal in my approach to raising support. And so those who might be listening and have questions about our ministry and want to get together for coffee with me and my wife can reach out to us at our email, which is Sean Higgins, which is SHAWNHIGGINS, and that's at the same website, which is ratiochristi.org. And then also we have our giving platform that's there on from the website. If you go into the missionaries and type in my name and look it up, you'll find me on there, and that's my giving platform. And so that's the other way they can go about that.
Okay. Now, I know, and you don't necessarily have to tell us, but I know that you have a certain dollar amount mm-hmm. that you need to raise on a monthly basis. How is that going?
We're at about 42% right now.
Okay. And so, you're leaving when?
June 1st.
June 1st. Okay.
All yeah, right. we're going to go down. We're going to finish building our team as much as we can here, and then we're going to move down and raise the rest of our support while we're in the state.
Okay. Now, when you said, you know, it's a student-run organization, so you'll have these students that are going to be working more or less under you. How big of a organization do you intend or would like to build on the campus there?
Well, to begin with any student organization, each college has the amount of student leaders you have to have. Like, I think where we're going, we have to have 4, maybe 5. I have to check it again when we get down there. But we've already got 3 at least, if not another a fourth one. And so we might have all of ours when we get down there. But each one, we have to at least have that in order to be recognized as a group, because then we have to write a constitution for the group, and then also have to have a faculty advisor, which we already have that as well. And so they have to have those. So those are the big keys. And beyond that, it's whoever we can get. Whatever God gives to us, and we get the chance to influence and grow these students, we're happy with it. But when we get done, when we get some of these student leaders trained as they grow, and that they, if they want to get involved further, our plans are is to send them out to some of the other colleges in the area. There's at least 10 colleges within 40 minutes of each other in the area, with about a 200,000 students between them. And so we want to send these students out to reach these other colleges. NC State has a chapter already, so they're going. Then Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, which is just to the east of us, is going to have a chapter this spring. Well, they already formed it this spring, but as they're forming those, we're going to be working together to try to reach these other colleges in the area. And so my goal is to reach UNC, but also to send leaders out to reach the other colleges. I would like to see a chapter on each one of those colleges as we go through time.
So there's already 2 other colleges or universities that have chapters.
Yes, one's a secular college, NC State, and then the other one's a Christian seminary, which with the Southern Baptist organization.
Right, but that leaves at least eight or more others in the area that
eventually have a
chapter in.
Yeah, definitely. And these students, they come from everywhere. We have a at the church plant we're going to be attending. They have a female there. She's originally from Saudi Arabia. She came here, accepted Christ as her Savior, stayed here and got married. But I mean, that just shows you where all these students are coming from. And if we can reach them, train them, and then send them out to wherever God leads them to go, they get to take that training with them and reach others. And that gets me highly excited to see what God will do globally with what we're doing, because we believe that the university campus, it is the source of the river that we know is culture. And so the ideas, the beliefs, and the culture that we're seeing, all the stuff that we're seeing go in our culture today is a result of what's been taught on the campus years ago. And so we want to go upstream and hit the source and then see it flow downstream and impact culture. And so those students, they go into these leadership positions and take that with them.
I find it interesting, too, that, you know, most of the colleges and universities in this country originally were founded by churches or religious organizations, and a great majority of them were founded for the purpose of training pastors. And we see that, you know, in a situation today where it's gotten completely opposite. Many of them not only are no longer connected to religious organizations or in the business of training pastors, but they're actually, you know, teaching a lot of things that are, you know, opposite of the church. And that's where we've come in a couple hundred years.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that drew me into this, is seeing the fact that they are trying to counter what's going on there is with this organization. I mean, with the new atheist movement, when they come up, I mean, this had a terrible impact upon our culture. But men such as Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Christopher Hitchens, who's no longer with us, and then Sam Harris, those four men, their impact, they're well known throughout culture, and their influence is great. I mean, Richard Dawkins and Dennett both, they really push for Secular Student Alliance, which is kind of the antithesis of what we're doing. They're the atheist or secular humanist version of what we're doing, and they seek to reach these college campuses for their side of things. And so we'll have to deal with some of that as well. And so, yeah, they're pretty much, they're shouting that Christianity is irrational, that Christianity is evil, that if God does exist, he doesn't intervene, or he doesn't exist at all. And then they trample underfoot Jesus in the New Testament, trying to say that it's irrelevant, Jesus never existed, whatever it might be. They try to do whatever they can to push it out. I mean, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, they were all Christian colleges at one time, and you see where they've gone now. And I mean, if you think of the movie God's Not Dead,
right?
The first one especially, that is what's going on. I mean, it might be in different forms, might not be exactly in the classroom, might be out on the campus, but whatever it might be, these students, they come in, the Christian students especially. I mean, statistics are showing anywhere from 75 to 85% are walking away from the church while on the college campus. And that's through the attacks coming from their professors, but also from their friends and culture itself. I mean, they've got all these things stacked against them, and so we seek to help them, but also to reach the ones that are there. And so, if I could, I wanted to share. Let me find this here. I'm trying to find the
mic. Go right ahead. We still have plenty of time. So
yeah.
Go right
and on. So, what we seek to do, really, and I want to lay this out because this is important to what we're doing, is we examine the truth of Christianity. Our organization is this is kind of what makes us unique. We seek to partner with these other groups that are on campuses and try to assist them and be in a fellowship with them and help with reaching the campus, but also with the churches in the area. But what we uniquely seek to do is to examine the truth of Christianity by looking at the historical, the philosophical, the scientific evidence for the Christian faith, seeking to provide a case that shows that it's true. And then also understanding the ideas and the beliefs that are being pushed on campus that are contrary to Christianity, and showing why those hold no water. The ones that are coming against Christianity attacks, we want to show that those hold no water. And so we try to understand them, engage them, and also, I mean, many times, this is one of the biggest things you asked a little bit ago about us, about having some pushback on campus. I've had pushback from Christian students as well. And there's this teaching that goes on in Christianity today that in order to have biblical faith, it has to be a blind faith. You can't have any good reasons for your faith. which is very contrary to what Scripture teaches. 1 Peter 3:15, which says, "Be ready always with an answer to everyone that asks you a reason of the hope that is within you, only do so with meekness and fear." Or Jude 3, which says, "To contend for the faith once for all delivered unto the saints." Those verses teach us to have a reason why we believe what we believe and be able to communicate that to others. But I've had students come to me and say, "Why are you out here talking to people, debating with people, all this? That's so offensive. You don't, and plus you can't do that. In order to have biblical faith, you can't have reasons for it." And so really we try to rebut that view as well. So we try to challenge Christians that would say we have to have blind faith, as well as atheists who say it as well. And then discipling students, as I said, discipling students is one of my biggest things, is seeing them trained and being able to reach others. And so let me give you the vision statement. This is straight from the organization. They say, "Our vision is a thoughtful Christianity, transforming lives on campus today, changing culture tomorrow." And that goes back to that picture I created with the river. And so imagine this. Imagine what could happen if every Christian student and professor could confidently give an answer for the hope that they have in Christ. Imagine a world transformed by a generation raised up to know why they believe what they believe, so they can go and share that with others. That is what we seek to accomplish, and that is what we are after when it comes to reaching these campuses, seeing the Christians trained and reaching others, and then seeing, and then also reaching out to the unbelievers and showing why they should trust Christianity too.
When you were working on the campus here, and did you find there were more of the students that you talked to? Did you find there were more that had been in church that have kind of walked away from their faith, or did you find more that had never been in church?
I think I found a good balance of them there. The ones who were in church and then left, I found those, I talked to those, tried to share the gospel with them, as well as try to invite them back into the church. We also found the ones that had never been in church. There's a kind of a mixed bag there with the generation that's on college now. A lot of them don't have that church experience in their background. They're kind of like me in my background. But also the ones that were in church still, but were on the college campus. I have fun with this, but I oftentimes when I talk to a Christian student for the first time, I don't tell them I'm a Christian right away. So oftentimes I'll ask them why they answered the way they did, and oftentimes they can't give reasons either. We find blind faith on both sides of the issue, whether it be a Christian or an unbeliever. We find blind faith on both sides. And so I try to challenge both of them to know why they are saying what they say and trying to engage them from there.
It sounds to me, tell me what you think, but it sounds to me something that I've discovered over my 20 years of teaching the Bible and pastoring churches is I feel that one of the weakest areas in our church today is the discipling of Christians. And I've often felt that, you know, people are spending a lot of time in church. They're not really growing. They're not being discipled. And I think that's why we run into those situations where when you ask somebody why you answered that way, they can't really give you a good reason.
Oh, definitely. I've seen that as well, is that there's a lack of discipleship in some churches, not all. It's because some of them do a good job of discipling, but then maybe the individual themselves didn't take it to heart, didn't really want it for themselves. But nonetheless, discipleship is a very key piece. I mean, that's why Jesus said, "Don't go make converts." He didn't say go and make converts. He said, "Go and make disciples." In Matthew 28, he said to go out there and to reach them, but also to disciple them and baptize them, and then teach them everything that you've been taught. Pretty much, I'm paraphrasing there, but that's what he pretty much says. He doesn't just say go and lead them to Christ and then leave them alone. Let them suffer on their own. No, I mean, if you read throughout Acts, I mean, they were constantly together, searching the Bible together, praying together, and growing together, and then seeking to reach their world. And I think that's why they had success. Not that it was because of God, but because they stuck close to God and they sought to grow people in that relationship with Him. And so I think discipleship is a huge key to this problem. And sometimes discipleship amounts to just knowing how to study the Bible, which is important, but they don't go any further than that. There's no teaching on evangelism. There's no teaching on apologetics, and I think those two things have to be incorporated into, especially in the culture we live today. Apologetics has been throughout the history of the church from the very beginning up until just a few decades ago. It was a big emphasis. We got into this point where we backed away, like in the early 1900s, we backed away from culture, from schools, and from all this stuff because we thought we couldn't compete, and that's what's led to some of this problem of Christians not being ready, but also the culture looking at Christians as being ignorant because we've ran away from the intellectual and the educational fields in our culture. And so now we're seeking to go back to that.
And I appreciate the fact that earlier in our conversation you briefly defined apologetics, and that's a word that is often misunderstood in our culture today because we think, you know, somebody apologizes for something, they're sorry, you know, whatever. So again, just for our listeners' sake, because it is very important, please go ahead again and tell us, you know, the root of that word and what it means.
The root of the word is the Greek word apologia, which means to give a reason defense. And so pretty much it's defending what you believe, knowing why you believe what you believe, and being able to communicate that to somebody else to give a defense for what you say you believe. And so I think really if you're going to say you believe in something, for me especially, I had to have good reasons to embrace it. And so the apologetics part of it was important for bringing me to faith. And so that's one use of it. It's also used to defend against the attacks going on. But beyond that, it's also to strengthen the brethren because we all struggle with doubts at some point. Every single worldview, every single belief system, they all have some form of blind faith or a little bit of a gap where they have to just say, hey, look, I don't understand that point, but I'm going to believe what I believe anyways. And so apologetics seeks to shrink that gap because it provides us with reasons and it kind of fills in some of those dark areas for us. And so when we struggle with doubts, we have a good foundation of I know this about Christianity, I know this evidence supports it. And so when I struggle with doubts, I have those things to fall back on as well as God's word being reliable, because that's the one you use apologetics is showing that the Bible is reliable. I mean, Luke, John, the second half of the book of Acts have been shown to be true beyond a reasonable doubt through archaeology as well as history. I mean, they have 144 pieces of evidence supporting it. And so that would actually lead me to believe that, hey, when I struggle with doubt, it's more my emotions getting in the way or more my misunderstanding of something than it is God lacking in something.
You shared your testimony with us. When you're having initial contacts with college students, maybe a first conversation with them and then maybe a second conversation with them, and you talked about, you know, your childhood and things like that. You know, obviously as Christians, our testimony is a very important part of why we believe what we believe and who we are as a person, and it allows us opportunities to connect with people. How often does, you know, your testimony come into play when you're having an initial or maybe a second conversation with a college student?
It usually doesn't come up right away unless they ask, because here's the thing, because I say that I believe something because of this, somebody else can say something else, and we'll never get around to the evidence of it. And so, really, I mean, if I say I believe it because I experienced this or experienced that, and a Mormon comes and goes, well, I believe what I believe because I got a burning in the bosom, and I believe that. Or an atheist comes along and says, well, this is what I've always been taught in school, and this is what I believe. That doesn't get us anywhere. And so I can share my testimony. It's powerful. It's a good thing to use, but it has to be also, there has to be some other things with it. That's more of a subjective way of showing that something is true, whereas an objective way would be to discuss the evidence and see which one lines up reality more often. I created this list, for example. This is something, one of my favorite things to use with somebody that claims to be an atheist, is taking, like, I think I got 15 pieces of reality. And I take the Christian side of things and the atheist side of things, their explanation for these different things, and go down through the list with an atheist. And oftentimes, they've only thought about the first couple. They haven't thought about, well, if I embrace atheism, I no longer have free will because I'm just a material object. If I embrace materialism, I have no consciousness. I can't reason. I can't even say that there's good or evil. And so oftentimes when I get to those issues, they hold more Christianity in their worldview than what they do their own. And so so I think getting to the evidence side of things, for me, that's where I usually go to. But it just depends on the person. I don't always have to use it. Some people, I can share the gospel with them, and they're ready for it. They already believe that God exists. They're emotionally ready. They lean more to their emotional side of things with their brain, whereas some of us lean more toward towards the intellectual side of things. And so it just depends on the person. I try to treat each person as an individual and reach them where they're at.
Sean, we've got about 4.5 minutes left. Is there, you know, anything else you'd like to share, you know, specifics about, you know, the things that you do or the organization itself?
I know one thing I would invite you to, if you want to go on YouTube and look up Ratio Christi, there's a ton of videos that our organization has put out, as well as teachings and stuff like that, that you go on there and find on YouTube for free and check out to find out a little bit more about the organization itself and what we try to do, the debates that we host, the speakers that we host, the way we go about reaching students on the campus, all the different things. You're going to find some kind of video on it there on YouTube. And the website also, if you go onto the website, I shared earlier, if you go onto the website, there's some resources on there that you go on and download. They have little booklets, about 30, 40, maybe 50 pages of a booklet on different issues concerning apologetics. And so I would also advise our listeners to go on there and check that out. Either if you don't know Christ as your Savior right now, maybe you're questioning whether it's true, that'd be a good starting place to go, is to go read those booklets. Also, to reach out to me, I'd love to meet with you and share what led me to faith, even more detailed with you. But beyond that, if you're a Christian, it would encourage you to go and reach others. And so I think it doesn't bring any glory to our Savior if we stay silent and we stay reserved in our house or within our bubble in our church instead of reaching the lost world around us. I think, as he pointed out when he was here on the earth, as well as Paul and the other apostles throughout their time, we have to be concerned with those around us and seeking to reach them. And so that's where this comes from, is just a heart to reach these students where they're at in a time of their life where they're transitioning and making decisions that like none other. And so I think that's where our heart's at, is trying to reach them. It's not just going out there and trying to argue with somebody. It's more, I want to reach them where they're at and answer any questions that they have, meet them as a person, as an individual, and just try to touch where they're hurting at, pretty much.
Great. All right, well, great. It's been great having you here, Sean. I appreciate it. And why don't you give us that website again where people can go to find out more information?
It's www.ratiochristi, which is ratiochristi.org.
And from there, they also could contact you. You said your email was there?
My email is seanhiggins@, and then the website, which would be ratiochristi.org.
Great. All right, well, folks, I would encourage you to go to the website, find out a little bit more. And pray about it if God lays it upon your heart to support Sean, especially through prayer. But even if God lays it upon your heart to support Sean financially, I know that he would certainly appreciate it. Again, I want to thank Sean for being here. And to all of our listeners, I want to thank you for listening. Next week, we will get back to our Bible study in Ephesians. Also, too, you can visit our website, which is studyhiswordradio.org. Again, that's studyhiswordradio.org. And at our website, you can contact me with comments or questions that you had about our interview today. You can send any kind of questions or comments about the Bible study that we've been doing. If you didn't hear our Bible study the last 2 weeks, you can go to www.gh1071.com and go to the archive section. And the last two shows are available there in the archive section. You can listen to the entire show, or you can listen to the Bible study portion of it. In the next week or two, on my website, you'll have the opportunity to order CDs of the Bible study itself. So again, I want to thank everybody who was listening this morning. I look forward to seeing you again next week and talking with you next week. I wish I could see you, but at least I get to talk with you next week. Also, I would encourage you to, at our website, you can submit your prayer requests, and we will pray your request here on the air. And again, we'll use first names only, but if you have a family that you want us to pray for, then their last name, we will pray for them. Otherwise, we'll honor your prayer requests and pray with you. So have a blessed week, and I look forward to talking with you next week.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian Dick Gregory,